everyone, and Merry Christmas to you and to your family. Or if it's just another regular Wednesday for you, I hope you are doing well and good and that you're enjoying yourself. Thank you for tuning in to Red Ice Radio. I'm Henrik. We are based out of Sweden, Scandinavia, and our website is redicecreations.com and also redicemembers.com, our members' website where we archive all the good stuff. Today, Robert Bavall is with us for an hour segment, and he's going to tell us about the recent Hawass scandal involving himself, two Germans, and the accusation of a stolen cartouche from the Great Pyramid. The theatrics of the former chief of the antiquities in Egypt continues, and we'll see what Robert has to say about this one. So stay with us. Well, hey, Robert, welcome back to Red Ice Radio. Good to talk to you again. How have you been since we last talked? A couple of months ago, I think.
Hi, Henrik. I'm fine. A bit tired. I'm overworked as usual, but otherwise fine. And I have quite a story to tell you.
Yes, I heard this. I heard it a little bit on, from afar, as it were. What has happened? Give us the story.
Well, let me tell you the story first, and then I'll give you the ins and outs of it. This year, on the 17th of April, two Germans, a man called Dominik Gorlitz, who is a PhD in archaeological research, I'm not quite sure the exact title, and Stefan Ehrman, who is a German writer. They had requested permission, official permission, these permissions, by the way, let me explain, to visit monuments. They wanted to visit the Great Pyramid on a private basis. These permissions are issued through a travel agent. So you can, for example, go to a travel agent who will contact a local travel agent in Egypt. This local travel agent puts a request to the antiquity department saying, I've got people who want to visit the pyramid. They find you a slot usually before or after visiting hours, tourist visiting hours. And then you have to pay an amount, and they give you the permit. I think it's about $3,000 for a visit.
Wow.
Of 2 hours. Mm. The $3,000 cover either one person or 20. It doesn't matter.
It's always.
However, on this point, which is not what I want to talk about, but really on this point, I've always been shocked that they do this. The Great Pyramid, as you know, is one of the ancient wonders of the ancient world. To rent it out like an hotel room, it's kind of bizarre, really. And unfortunately, they rent it to anybody. I mean, there's no credentials required.
Do they have, when that happens, by the way, I presume you've been part of when this has occurred.
I've had permits for my groups, yes.
Yeah. Is there like a security guard with you guys when you do
that? Yes. Okay, let me give you how it happened, and it will come out with the story of the
journey.
Anyway, so they had, in fact, two permits. They had a permit to visit the in the morning, the Cave of Birds, you know, the one that Andy Collins talked about a lot?
Yep, sure.
And then in the evening, from 6 to 8, they had a permit to visit, on a private basis, the Great Pyramid. So the way it's done is that they presented themselves at 10 minutes to 6, I presume, and they're met by an inspector who's been allocated to go with them inside the pyramid. In this particular case, there was the inspector with a young trainee. I'm not quite sure who he is, right? So there was the inspector with another Egyptian with him, a young man, and then there was the tour operator, representative of the tour operator, who came with a permit. And there was three Germans, the two that I've mentioned, and a third one who was a camera man who came to film the whole thing. So that's the team, if you like. And they were taken inside the pyramid by the inspector. Now, I must say that this was not the first time that one of the Germans, Ehrman, had visited the pyramid with permits.
Right. Well,
and sometimes without, I'm not quite sure. So he was quite a common visitor to this monument. Dominic, I don't know if he had visited the pyramid before, but it was the first time that he was going on a private visit of this kind. Now, let me say from the outset that I've been in communication with Dominik Gorlitz over the last week. I've just spoken to him right now, by the way. So I know the exact thing that happened in this chamber, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, before I go into that, whatever happened in this chamber was on the 17th of April. Nobody knew about it other than inspectors. It was just a normal visit, you know, and that was it. The whole story blew up a few weeks ago because they put their visit on the internet, as you may have seen.
Yeah.
With a YouTube, all right? Have you seen this YouTube?
No, I haven't seen the clip yet. I heard about it. I was going to look at it.
And suddenly, hell broke loose. And the reason hell broke loose is because of Dr. Hawass, who completely misinterpreted what happened. In fact, I would go stronger, who created a wrong and very disingenuous story that caused the world media to go crazy on this story. This is what Hawass said to the media, that, and it came bad because he involved me. The final result of Hawass's education is, and here's the title. Here's the title of his accusation on an article in the major Egyptian newspaper. A Belgian Jew, supposed to be me, Belgian Jew paid German thieves to steal the cartouche of King Cheops in the Great Pyramid.
Oh boy.
But imagine with this, and he names me afterwards. So the Belgian Jew, his name is Robert Boval. So you imagine with this title, the press went bananas. I went bananas, of course. I was not only because he's made this accusation against me, but I was actually very angry at these Germans to have taken the cartouche. I mean, this was a shocking thing to do because, as you know, the so-called cartouche of King Khufu are in the relief chambers, right?
Yep.
These are chambers, there's five chambers above the king chamber. And it's the only evidence that Egyptologists use with conviction to tie the pyramid to King Khufu. There is no other inscriptions in this monument, as you know.
That's right.
So, of course, not only it has tremendous archaeological, historical meaning, but it is the holy grail of Egyptology, this name that is inside the Great Pyramid. So you can imagine, it's a bit like stealing the chalice of the Vatican from the Pope. I mean, it's bad news. So I was, of course, incensed against these Germans, basing myself on what Hawass had said. Now, let me tell you what really happened, right?
Yep.
And I will then, after this interview, send you the evidence visual and in writing, okay?
All right.
So there's no doubt at all in your mind that what I'm about to tell you, which is what the Germans told me, is true.
Right.
And let me say this from the outset. I'd rather believe anybody than Dr. Hawass these days. So, but let me get on with the story. So we're now back at the pyramid on the 17th of April at 6 p.m. And I've just described who was there. And they enter the pyramid. They go up the ascending passage. They go up the grand gallery. And they go inside the king's chamber. Now, the intentions of the two German researchers, Dominik Gorlitz and Stefan Ehrman, was not at all to go in the relief chambers at this stage. They had not even planned to go in there. Their mission was to photograph dark patches on the ceiling of the king's chamber, which they suspected might have been something other than mere soot from the ancient torches. Okay?
Yeah.
Which they did. The inspector kindly allowed them to put a ladder. They climbed the ladder and they went up on the ceiling, which, as you know, is quite high. If I'm not mistaken, it's about 7 meters high. And they photographed these patches. They came down and realized that, in fact, it had taken much less time than they had expected. They had a permit for 2 hours, and they already taken about 15 minutes. So the inspector said, well, what do you want to do? And this is when Ehrman who had been, by the way, many, many times inside the pyramid and inside the relief chambers. He had been there before, told Dominic, well, you haven't seen this graffiti. Why don't you go up there and have a look? I mean, you know, we've got a permit. And now, I must emphasize that at that point, the permit they had normally does not cover the relief chambers. There's a bit of doubt about this because the relief chambers, as you know, are there. They're open. And I'm not quite sure what the permit says exactly, but I presume that it does not include the relief chambers, right? However, they asked the inspector if it was okay to do that. The inspector was a bit reluctant. He wasn't quite sure, but eventually he didn't see any harm in it. And they said, okay, well, you paid for 2 hours. So they put the ladder up there. The first person to go up the ladder was Dominic Golitz. He was followed by the filmmaker. The third person was Ehrman. But the ladder, as you may have been up there, I'm not quite sure. Have you been there, Henry?
No, not yet.
Well, it's a very rickety kind of ladder. I mean, it's kind of puzzling that they have this wooden ladder. In fact, it's two ladders tied with ropes. So you really don't want to fall from this ladder because you would tumble down the Grand Gallery. So Ehrman realized that the ladder was not holding three people. And so he shouted, said, you guys go in. I've been there already. And I'll make sure that I wait here and that the ladder is in place. Because once you're up there, if you don't have a ladder, you can't come down. So anyway, that's it. And Dominic Golitz went in. The filmmaker went in. They climbed above to the final chamber at the top, the one that has a pitched roof. It's the others are flat roofs, very narrow, very low roofs. And in there, this is when Dominic, realizing that this was an opportunity to scientifically test this graffiti. Now, we know that this graffiti has been in much doubt about its authenticity.
Sure.
And so forth.
Yeah.
And from a scientist's point of view, you have to realize that the man is a scientist. And he didn't think about the politics and the permits. He was up there. It was a chance to take a bit of the ochre paint. Now, there's a lot of graffiti, by the way, and there is a lot of modern graffiti. I mean, it isn't just the ancient graffiti. The place is loaded with visitors who have been in this chamber.
Yeah, from like
chamber is open.
Late 18th century, they were there and painting their names on there and everything.
Yes,
right?
So. And even now, I mean, I have films in my possession where I will be showing on the YouTube very soon that people were going up there like they were visiting Central Park, you know.
Right.
It was open to the public, and all this rubbish about permits and all this is just a front because people would sometimes without even a permit, the ladder was there, and very often a tourist would climb, and the inspector wouldn't see him. You know, it's that kind of mess.
Yeah.
So, having said this, here is a very important thing to understand, because as you know, Hawass claimed that they stole the cartouche, all right?
The whole thing, right?
Well, that's what he claimed.
Yeah.
Now, they didn't even touch the cartouche. The cartouche was not touched at all. You're dealing with a scientist here who wanted to take a very minute, apparently he took 1.5 milligrams of ochre paint from a graffiti. You will see the pictures when I send them to you. From a graffiti that he judged being insignificant. He's absolutely right. There are inscriptions, but there are this graffiti that's two lines. Whoever put them there just painted two lines. They really mean nothing. And he scratched 1.5 milligrams. You know, you can hardly see the scratch. He put it in a little container, and he went down. The inspector was not aware of this. So I'll confirm. You'll see the statements that he made, because these Germans are shocked by what they've been accused of, and I've encouraged them, and they fully agree that they made now official statements that the Egyptians who have been arrested, many Egyptians have been arrested because of this, are totally innocent.
Right.
But I'll get to that in a minute. So anyway, that's the story. And they went back to Germany, and that's it. And they gave the sample to a laboratory. The intention was not to date, because you can't date red ochre, although many stories have said that maybe there is pigment in there and you can date that. But in fact, Dominic has just confirmed to me that not only their intention was not to date, but it cannot be dated. You can't date this red ochre paint. It's not organic enough. So what they wanted to do was to at least perhaps determine if it was, you know, because we have two possibilities. Either it was put there when the pyramid was built, because these chambers were sealed, as you know. So
yeah,
either it was put, or it was put after Howard Weiss opened them in 1835. So yeah, I mean, with, you can tell if paint is more is 5,000 years old. Or,
a couple of hundred.
So I suppose that's what they were hoping to do.
Right. You know?
But that's neither here nor there for the moment, because we're dealing with a political issue here. So that was it. So when the when Hawass made the accusation, I'll give you the exact date, on the 10th of December, Hawass went to the local press and screamed blue murder with the title, Belgian Jew pays German thieves to steal the cartouche of Cheops. You can see the distortion of this story, and you can see the intention. Because Hawass wanted to create a huge, huge international scandal, not only to soil my name, you know, the Belgian Jew. By the way, I'm not a Jew.
Yeah, not I was going to ask, are you Jewish?
I honestly, I was born a Catholic, Hendrik, but I do not practice religion. But if I was born a Jew, I still wouldn't mind at all. I mean, my best friends are Jews. I mean, I don't think like that at all.
Sure, sure.
But Dr. Hawass, by saying a Jew, wanted to, of course, fire up all the Egyptian people who were already very fired up because of this revolution.
Sure. Yeah,
and get everybody excited. And how bad it is for a Jewish plot to pay Germans to steal the cartouche of Cheops. I mean, of course, everybody went up in arms.
Nazis in, collaboration with the Zionists. Got it.
That's it. The Zionists are with the Nazis, and they're going there, and they're going to steal this name of the most important king of ancient Egypt, right?
Sure, sure.
So, of course. And everybody, because the man was an ex-minister, he still got a lot of, he's a rather famous man, as you know.
A lot of press behind him still, yeah.
Galore on this. I mean, every single German newspaper reported this story, and so you can imagine me who, saying, what the hell is going on, you know? I didn't know these Germans. In fact, it was the first time I heard about these Germans. So I thought, well, the best thing is to contact them and see, maybe they told Hawass, you know, that somehow they wanted to put the blame on me. So I finally found Dominic. He was in the States at the time, Dominic Gorlitz. And I must say immediately that I realized very quickly that I was speaking to a very stable, very balanced scientist who was as shocked as I am to read Hawass's accusation.
Yep.
And although he knew about me because he read my books and so forth, he said, you know, I'm deeply sorry about this, but of course I will make a statement right away, which he did, saying I had nothing to do with them. We didn't even know each other. And this was sent to the Egyptian press, and that's it. As for the accusations of being a Jew, I had to, believe it or not, Hendrik, I was asked to supply my birth certificate, my baptism certificate, the marriage certificate of my parents, which all confirmed that I'm not a Jew. And I even had one Egyptian involved who said, would you be willing to subject yourself to a medical test so we can examine your genitals?
Oh, wow,
can
really?
You believe this? Like this, I mean, it's true. I'm telling you the truth. So I thought, well. So jokingly, I said, well, if you can fix me up an appointment with a doctor, I'll even appear on Egyptian television quite willingly. I mean, if that's what it takes to stop this this crazy accusation. So.
Well, if you're referring to circumcision, don't they have a tradition within Islam as well on that?
Actually, they do, but
or something
since I'm supposed to be a Roman Catholic.
right.
And luckily, in case your listeners are interested, I am not circumcised, right? It's very obvious that I'm not, okay? I don't want to say more on this.
Oh, boy.
But there you are.
That's funny, yeah.
They asked me to send pictures. So I thought, this is getting ridiculous.
Oh, boy.
But anyway, so Dominic did the right thing, and he confirmed all this, that I was not involved. But Hawass had also said in his accusations that I said that the Jews built the pyramids. Now, it's not the first time he says this. He said it many times, and I keep telling him, I do not say the Jews built the pyramid. I mean, it's absurd, the theory. I know there is a theory like that, that some people talk about it in the 19th century. Quite the contrary. I mean, I've written Breaking the Mirror of Heaven with Ahmed Osman, where we actually debunk this theory.
Right.
So, yeah. So anyway, I had to send them a copy of my book so they can check. And by the way, those who have Breaking the Mirror of Heaven, please refer to page 59. All right. It's very clearly there that I do not subscribe to this theory at all. And in fact, I poo-poo it, you know, it's nonsense.
Yeah.
Okay. But further on, the Germans, I said, well, listen, there's a whole confusion here. You must make a very clear statement as to what happened in this chamber. They said, we did. We kept sending this to the ministry, but nobody's replying to us. And we keep hearing about this stealing of the cartouche. So I said, well, look, I mean, it's too important. I mean, you sound like trustworthy guys, but I can't take on face value. You know, I'll have to quote here the famous quote from Groucho Marx that I often use in my talks. And Groucho Marx once said to an audience, do you believe what I say or what you see with your own eyes? Well, in this case, I had to see with my own eyes. I mean, I'm not going to accept anybody on verbal situations now, even though, like I said, the German Dominic appeared to be a very honest man. The statement, I will send it to you, Hendrik, but importantly, the statement says that it was, it repeats more or less what I've told you so far.
Right.
But they also are very noble. They did something very, very noble, which immediately made me respect them a lot. They said, we do not want any Egyptians to be prosecuted because of us. We totally and utterly absolve any involvement with any Egyptians and the inspector and so forth. They did not know that we had taken the sample.
Right.
And I thought that was marvelous because they could have passed the blame to others and diluted their problem, but they didn't.
Sure.
So now here is so far what happened. You know, and I'll send you all the documents. You will see the pictures. Now, of course, they send me what you will get, and I am looking at them right now. You will have high-definition photography because, as you may or may not know, a lot of people have taken, cutoffs, or what's the word, from the YouTube.
Yeah, like a screenshot from the
screenshots.
Video.
Yeah. I'm a bit old-fashioned. I don't know these new terms. They took a screenshots from the YouTubes. And they're very low definition, and you can't see very well. You know?
That's right.
So I asked them to send me high definition photography, which they had taken. Now, as a scientist, Dominic did it in a scientific manner. He took pictures before he removed the 1.5 milligrams. He showed exactly where it is. He then took pictures after they removed, so you can see the little scratch. I mean, you really have to look very carefully to see the scratch. I mean, you realize 1.5 milligrams is nothing. And you can see very clearly from the picture that the cartouche is at least a meter and a half from them. They did not touch it. But you could say, well, yeah, but what if they did also take from the cartouche as well, right?
Right.
I mean, a good lawyer will say, well, look, sure, I mean, I can see from the pictures, but what tells me that you maybe afterwards did not just take from the cartouche and you're not showing it in pictures? No, they said that they filmed the whole thing in high definition. There was a cameraman, and it's very clear that they filmed from entering the room and exiting the room, and the cartouche is still there unharmed. Okay, so I think there is no doubt at all as to this cartouche not having been touched. And I can tell you today, I'm very pleased to tell you today, because I've been assisted by a lot of good friends of mine on this matter in Egypt. Some of them are journalists, a very highly placed journalist in the most prestigious journalistic agency in the Middle East. It's called the MENA. You probably know of the MENA. MENA is the Middle Eastern news agency. It is the official state news. And a journalist who is very honest, very open-minded, said, okay, let's get the truth of this story. And so they've been assisting me to pass this story to the Egyptian public. You know, and they have received all the proof that you will receive. And they've published a story yesterday, my interview, saying more or less what I said to you, with supporting evidence, of course, because they needed to see with their own eyes. And now I understand that the Minister of Antiquity, who is in charge, has recognize that the cartouche is not harmed. In fact, it's very easy to prove. All they have to do is go and have a look, which I presume they have. So there's no more talk about this cartouche being stolen. Now, you have to understand the motive of Dr. Hawass. Von Hawass did this because he wants to remove this minister. Hawass wants to return back to become in charge of the antiquities again. And he wants to redeem himself from all the accusations and want to appear as the big hero who has exposed a Zionist Nazi plot. he will be renamed minister and will get rid of the other one who was not attentive and allowed this to happen. You understand?
Right, right. Okay.
Now he's been unmasked very badly. And I can tell you that yesterday, I think it was yesterday or before yesterday, he was giving a lecture at the Journalist Syndicate of Cairo, of Egypt, in Cairo. And of course, the first question that the journalist asked him is, why did you accuse Mr. Robert Baval of being masterminding this plot, the Jewish plot? And his exact words, and we have it in writing, is, I do not have proof that Mr. Baval was involved. So for God's sake, he made those accusations a few days before and he didn't have proof. I mean, what kind of a man is that? Now, I'm not going to even accept this. I want a full retraction from Dr. Hawass. Not just to say he didn't have proof. I want him to go on his knees and say, I retract this. And I want it to be public. No, I'm very serious.
Sure.
Because
sure.
Had he made these accusations here in Europe, I would have had him in court already.
Sure.
And he would have had to face a very serious defamation suit. Now, he's very lucky that he's in Egypt, and at the moment they have other fish to fry. And besides, I want the Egyptians themselves to prosecute this man. They should have prosecuted him a long time ago, as you know. As you may know, by the way, I keep saying this, but presumably you do know, that there is a very serious investigation going on in America about him.
Sure.
Are you aware of it?
Yeah.
Well, this is a scandal. This man has caused such a mess with the Egyptian for his own people. Can you imagine an ex-minister of state being investigated for bribery with the most prestigious organization in the world, which is the National Geographic Channel? I mean, it's incredible that this man has brought such reputable organization to be investigated for bribery.
Mm, yeah.
It's a scandal. And for him to go this enormous false accusation so that he can benefit himself with his lies, it doesn't reflect good on the Egyptian people that a minister can do that, blatantly accuse this way. I mean, it was so easy to disprove. I mean, first of all, let me tell you, I have not been in Egypt since last December. That's the last time I was in Egypt. So there's no way I could have been there in April. I did not know this German. It's very easy to prove. I have not, in fact, been in Germany for the last 20 years. And it's very easy to prove. And besides, these people have sworn affidavits. And the inspectors has confirmed. I just received a letter from the inspector who has been accused also of plotting this with the Germans, who has confirmed to the authorities that he didn't even know that these Germans. So Hawass has caused an international scandal involving Interpol, demanding that the German police issue arrest warrants for these Germans, accusing me of a Zionist plot, and having over half a dozen people, if not more, arrested in Egypt, just for his own benefit. And you see the madness of this man.
Now, do you think that he included you in this because of your prior, I guess, relationship? I mean, we've talked about him a few times on the program and everything else. Is that why he's going after you, to kind of stab at you a little bit?
Or he's been going after, yes. Yeah, he's been going after me for a long time. But he's used me, you know, to him. He thinks that what he said before about me being a Jew, people believe it. So he's used me as the Jew. He wants to say that there was a Jewish plot, all right? That's what he wants to say. And that presumably gets a lot of people in the Arab world upset that there is a Jewish plot to steal antiquities of Egypt.
Right.
So that's what he wanted to do. But his attack was, well, yes, of course, he was going to cause me a lot of problems. I mean, you can imagine, if I was in Egypt at the time, I would have been arrested. And
sure.
Even though I'm innocent, yeah, I would have had being interrogated. They would have probably kept me a week in jail, because that's what happens in Egypt, even though you're innocent. So the man is crazy.
Well, I was going to say, at least it might have been even worse than that if things are bad enough, you know, in the conditions surrounding, considering everything that's going on there right now, you might have ended up much, much, much longer in jail there, right?
Well, worse. I could have had a fanatic thinking that I'm a Jew who has wanted to steal the most important name of the most important king. And if these people are ready to blow themselves up for nonsense, I could have been in danger, and not just in Egypt. I mean, there's a lot of fanatics that when you start saying a Jew did this, they might, you may as well have issued a fatwa against me. You know, but I tell you what is worse to me is that he caused the arrest of innocent Egyptians. There are people in jail today because of his crazy lies, Hendrik.
So were these the other Egyptians who were, you know, part in helping the Germans around them, or who are these?
Well, there's the inspector, there is the assistant with the inspector, there is the director of the Giza Necropolis, there is the they're going to arrest everybody who has allowed those Germans to do this, even right. though they were innocent.
Yeah.
Because that's how an investigation goes. The question is, where does the buck stop? Well, Hawass wanted the buck to stop with Mohammed Ibrahim, the minister, by saying, this plot is so big that the minister was totally irresponsible for issuing permits to these Germans. Do you follow?
But this obviously could be checked right away, just as you said, even by the current inspector, and they would say, what is he talking about? There's no harm done here, right? So it's very unsubstantiated, the claims. It's very bad, you know?
Well, you're absolutely right, but it took a while to get this into the press. You know, everything is played in the media these days, and that's what Hawass did. He's very good at this.
Right.
So he went there and he spurted his accusation wildly, and of course it rooted all over the Arab world. I mean, like every single newspaper in the Arab world said Jews want to steal the pyramids with the paying Germans. So of course, when you have something like this rumbling in the media, it takes a while to sort of straighten it up.
And sure,
I had
sure.
to contact the Germans. We had to make them make their statements. And we're still doing it. It's 3 weeks later.
Sure, sure. Well, and usually even these, you know, these refutations and kind of how they take a story back or refute it or whatever, that ends up in the back of the paper anyway, if that happens. So most people don't even see that.
You're right, but I made sure that it's in the front of the papers because I threatened the papers.
Right.
It's the only way to get justice. I threatened Hawass with a lawsuit, and I threatened the newspapers with a lawsuit. And the papers realized that they had printed a defamation of the worst kind. You know, so they did the right thing and they interviewed me. I told my story, but I said, I don't want you to print my interview. Do not print my interview on hearsay. I'm going to send you all the documents that support everything I say.
Right.
Statements from the Germans, signed, my birth certificate, a copy of my book, and the testimonials if you want. Anybody I'm here in Spain, you know, I'm not in the pyramid, and so forth. And they accepted, and they did the interview. It was published yesterday, and the whole of Egypt, and I presume the whole of the Arab world, knows now that Mr. Hawass is not just a liar. He's a dangerous liar. He's a liar who, for his own agenda, has put in jeopardy and at risk the safety and security of many, many people, including his own people that used to work for him. Now, this is a man who is the most despicable kind, really. I mean, I'm speaking straight here. I'm not mincing my words as I usually do.
Sure.
We're dealing with a dangerous man who is under, but now he's got his back against the wall and he's ready to do anything to accuse anybody of anything in order to save his own skin. And worse, to try and get back to the ministry. This crazy man thinks that he's going to be appointed minister again. I mean, this man should be in a psychiatric hospital or at best behind bars. I've said it, and I'm sure a lot of people will agree with me. I mean, you probably remember chasing mummies and this kind of nonsense that we saw with this
Sure, family. Now, so it's not only that, that's on top of it. As you said, you had the National Geographic story there over the corrupt payments, you know. So there might be a number of things here. How should we put it? Is this the nail in the coffin for Hawass in terms of returning, do you think?
I hope so. I mean, it stinks to high heaven. Now, I don't want to accuse until proven guilty. But the background with this National Geographic story is really, I mean, let me give you the facts. In 2001, National Geographic created two things. They created the Explorer in Residence department, and Hawass was appointed Explorer in Residence. They have Explorer in Residence in some countries, I think about 12 of them. And Hawass was appointed Explorer in Residence with a stipend, with a salary of $200,000 a year. All right? So that's what they did. In 2002, Hawass was made chairman of the Antiquities. In 2002, that same year, in August, National Geographic, which had just been formed and created, announced that they were going to open live the door in the Great Pyramid. You remember this episode?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Come on. I mean, you don't have to be a genius to link all these dots. He clearly gave them preferential treatment, and he was being paid for it. Now, can you consider this a bribery? Well, they carried on paying him for 10 years, and they got many, many exclusivity from him.
Right.
So, of course, the Justice Department, when they found this out, are asking National Geographic, well, why did you give him $200,000 a year? I mean, what for? They say, well, he was a consultant, you know. $200,000 a year, even in Europe, is a lot of money. In Egypt, it's a fortune. It's a fortune. I mean, so they need now to explain why they gave him $200,000 a year, and they need to explain how come they were given preferential to any other competitors. You know, they, as you know, National Geographic got several exclusive live shows that they must have made a lot of money from that.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
I do not blame at all. I mean, I'm not surprised. In fact, I was surprised that the investigation was not going on before.
Yeah,
it might have been going on before, but the Justice Department did not declare it. As you may know, the Justice Department, the Department of Justice in America, does not inform the public of its investigations, only of the result. But it came out in a very strange way. Do you want to hear this a little bit?
Sure.
And you'd be surprised who is behind this. On the 27th, well, no, let me be precise. On the 25th of October this year, there was an announcement that a new internet newspaper was being published, was going to be announced, and it was called Vocative. Vocative launched itself on the 27th of October. The first article that they bring out has the title, I'm paraphrasing, but it's more or less the title because I don't have it in front of me. U.S. Department of Justice investigates bribery case involving National Geographic and ex-minister of antiquities, Zahi Hawass. I mean, that's the first. Now, when I saw it, I thought, well, be careful. It's one of those blogs, things are said. You know, there's many of these so-called newspapers. But no, this newspaper was announced before it was launched in all the major newspapers. The New York Times, New Yorker, all announced the arrival of this new style of newspaper. It's called Deep Web Research. They go deep with special search machines. Legally, of course. Apparently what you can get on the Google is only 20% of what is available. But the man behind it, it's most interesting, who is the man behind it? He's a man called Matti Kochavi. Now, who is Matti Kochavi? Well, let me be very brief because I want to take too much time on this interview. Matti Kochavi is an Israeli American who lives in New York, who comes from a very illustrious Israeli military family. He has a giant company called AGT. AGT employs openly 50 ex-Secret Service people from the Mossad.
Really?
In New York.
Huh.
Their objective, the company, very legal. The company is working for the U.S. government and now for many Gulf states. It provides security, anti-terrorist security systems to protect high installations and in the Gulf, the oil fields. This man has developed research equipment, which is roughly broadly called the Deep Web. But the idea is that it can, at very high speed, penetrate behind what you normally get with Google, for example, at the U.S. Department and so forth, or at government departments, or at airlines, or whatever.
Right.
All this legal. All this legal. I mean, it's totally on the ball. But the difficult thing here is that there is so much information that you don't know what to do with it. It's in the street and trying to listen to everybody talking at the same time. So they have a way to link up what they see as a potential danger. For example, as he explains, there may be somebody in Afghanistan who says, "I will be in New York in December to meet some other people." Then they hear another piece of news of somebody in New York saying, "I'm meeting somebody coming from Afghanistan." They piece the two information together. They have a trail, and this is how they say they can preempt any terrorist attack and track down. So anyway, this is the man behind this. So he's Vocative is being launched by this man and his team.
Interesting.
They're not kidding around. So you can trust the information. The U.S. Department is indeed investigating the National Geographic.
Mm-hmm.
So Hawass is in deep trouble, because not only the U.S. Department, but he's got this very heavyweight Israeli-American, who is, by the way, a personal friend of Bill Clinton. He's a very staunch Democrat. He's a very staunch supporter of the Obama administration.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. He's a very, and he doesn't like at all, I suppose, the owners of National Geographic Channel.
All right.
Because it isn't National Geographic that owns majority shares of the National Geographic Channel. It is Mr. Rupert Murdoch, who owns Fox TV. And Fox TV has been a great opponent to the Obama regime, as you know. Great opponent. So I don't know if that's this man's intention is to cause trouble to Rupert Murdoch and the Fox. But I would imagine, because the news came out in October, this article, and as you may remember, this is when the Republican Party were opposing the health bill of Obama, and the whole administration had to go on a standstill. You remember?
Yeah.
So it may well be that the real culprit behind this exposure of a bribery case, because if it is a bribery case, then the buck stops with National Geographic Channel, which stops with Fox and Rupert Murdoch. That's where it boils down to. And let's face it, Rupert Murdoch recently has not had much good publicity when it came to such matters, certainly in England, as the newspapers of the Times and others were accused of all sorts of hanky-panky to obtain their information. So there you are. This Zahi Hawass is in the middle now of two gigantic scandals, one involving National Geographic, the prestigious society, and the other one involving this affair at the pyramid. And the man needs to be stopped. I mean, he's causing one crazy mess. He's turned Egyptology, Henrik, you know this, he's turned Egyptology into a political mess.
Sure.
A political mess. It's no more Egyptology. It's about Zionist plots, and it's about German stealing. It's about National Geographic. And worse, he's turned Egyptology into some kind of Hollywood joke.
Right.
I mean, people are laughing at Egyptology now. I mean, you've seen Chasing Mummies. the exploration of the door, Hendrik, you know, when Gantebeek found the door in 93, we still don't know. He stopped. I compared him in my previous interview. Because he's made this thing political and religious, you know, the Jews, the Zionists, the thing. I compare them to the Vatican in the 16th century when Galileo brought the heliocentric theory. You know, they converted the scientific theory into a religious political mess.
Right. What if it's a bigger cover up behind there of kind of for the front, the facade of all this? They want to do that kind of the theatrics. You know, it's the bread and circuses kind of thing for the masses, but it. What if they're doing that in an effort to really like hold back, you know, genuine research behind the closed doors, if you will?
Oh, but what do you mean they?
Well, at the time then, when Hawass was in charge of this thing, and now it's, of course, I don't know how much different it is today, but, you know.
No, I don't think there is a they. I think it's Hawass. Hawass, unfortunately, dragged in the whole of Egyptology, who were silenced by him because they were afraid of him. They were afraid to say anything against him because he would lash back and remove their permits. So there was dead silence. There is dead silence now. And I can tell you one of the scandals that was raised in the previous interview. The real scandal is that this anti-Semitic attacks by Hawass is not being defended. I mean, the National Geographic, for Christ's sake, should come out and say, we do not support this kind of anti-Semitism. It's wrong. If Hawass had made this statement in France, as you know, he and National Geographic would have been in jail. It is illegal to do this, and rightly so. So there is a dead silence from the National Geographic. There's a dead silence for Egyptologists. Not one single Egyptologist has come out and either spoke in my behalf or said something about Hawass. There is a reign of terror here. And even if the man is not anymore the minister, they all are afraid that he will become minister again, and they're all keeping quiet. So that is, in a sense, the conspiracy.
What about the Guardians then, the Guardians.net, that whole, is that just Hawass himself really that's running all that?
Look, it's very clear that Hawass wants his own ideas of what ancient Egypt is, and particularly what the pyramids of Giza are, all right? He's collaborated with Mark Lehner, his colleague, for many, many years. And they came up with, frankly, one of the most banal theories that one can imagine. According to them, the theory is that the pyramid, although according to them is a tomb, it was also a social project, a community project for keeping the people of Egypt busy during the flood season. The Pharaoh did not know what to do with his own people, so he said, well, let's build a pyramid, keep them everybody busy. This is absurd. Absurd. I mean, the pyramid is an intensely religious occult monument meant for the highest of rituals of rebirth.
Sure.
And these people turned it into a sort of community project.
Yeah.
You know, it's ridiculous. But he wants it to be so.
Something to do on the pastime, a spare time when you. Yeah.
It's right. It's like when you arrest somebody and you give him a sort of a charge of working community work. You know.
Right.
It's absolutely ridiculous. It's totally out of context from what we know of the ancient Egyptians. I mean, if there was a King Cheops alive today, he would kill himself laughing. We went to the trouble of building these amazing monuments with a very profound purpose, and they think it was a community project? It's totally insane. But, therefore, anybody who said anything different was viciously attacked, called a pyramid idiot, called a liar, called a Jew, called the Zionist, and block them. I mean, that's what Hawass has been doing for 25 years. This is not Egyptology. It's not science. I call it Hitlerian politics. You know, I mean, the guy was a total dictator, refusing to even consider any other point of view, and viciously attacked his opponents to the point where he's willing to compromise his own people. So that's the kind of man, you know, and that's the crime. That's the real crime, you know.
Now, I've asked you this before, but is there any difference today with the people in charge
indeed,
of the antiquities?
No, indeed there is. Mm-hmm. Egypt is in chaos, as you know. I mean, they've just come out of, or are still not out of a revolution. There is a lot of things to sort out before dealing with this kind of nonsense of Hawass. But the man that they have in charge now is Dr. Mohammed Ibrahim. I have excellent reports from this. He's exactly the opposite of Hawass. He's a very calm man. He's a very humble man. He doesn't want to be in the limelight. He doesn't want to do chasing mummies. He doesn't want to become the Indiana Jones. He wants to do his job. And that's what Hawass should have done. So we got the right man there. But let's give him a chance. I mean, he's inherited an incredible mess, especially after a revolution. He's a bit like Obama after George Bush. You know, he's inherited a huge problem, and he has to slowly get the thing back together.
But Hawass, he's not doing much to repair it, let me tell you that, the way that he's enforced George Bush's policies and even having the same people on staff and everything. It's just, it's a big ruse when I look at it, to be honest, Robert. It's just, it's two different aspects of the dialectic, and we're not getting anywhere here because it's controlled by the same people, really, at, behind the scenes, you know. That's what I, well, that's what I think when I look at this.
You are not wrong there, but this is what needs to be done. We have to remove this behind-the-curtain control.
Sure.
Many Egyptians correctly believe that there is remnants. Indeed, there is the whole infrastructure of the old regime working behind the curtains here, still pulling the strings. And Dr. Mohamed Ibrahim, who is the antiquity minister, is extremely aware of this. He's extremely aware of this. I mean, many Egyptians are extremely aware of this. But we need to deroot them, to uproot them, remove them. And the first one to get rid of, as far as antiquities, is Dr. Hawass. He has to go. That's it. He has to go out of the way and at least give a chance to Ibrahim to clean up the system, you know. And we give full support on this. I mean, my cry to the antiquity department, whoever is the minister, is that the focus must be on the preservation of these monuments, of the restoration when restoration is needed, on the protection, and allowing science to progress. Because that's what it's all about, you know, the advancement of knowledge. Hawass has been exactly the opposite. Hawass has impeded knowledge, has turned the whole thing into a political game to his own benefit, and now it's a mess. You know, can you believe it, Henrik, that to this day he hasn't allowed people to publish information about the discovery of Canterbury?
Right.
It's incredible. One of the most important discovery that was made in archaeological work in Egypt, the discovery of the doors, we don't have published, apart from an initial publication, which was very, very basic, by the German Institute in 1993, I have not seen any publications, as far as I know, and certainly I have not seen any testing. We could have tested the wooden piece that was in the northern shaft. We could have tested and known what these metal bars were about.
Yeah.
We could indeed have opened the doors and solved the mystery if there is anything behind them.
Yeah, but so nothing has happened. And again, not to go off point there in any way, but that, to me, that whole thing, it perceives that it's a part of the charade, right? It's part of the charade. I mean, in terms of not actually getting to the core issues and actually solving things, it's just, it's a lot of, you know, smoke and mirrors kind of thing that he's been involved in, you know?
Well, I agree, during the reign of Hawass, certainly. But again, I have to repeat, you know, there is two things that happened since 2011. One is a country has undergone a revolution, literally a revolution. There is chaos in the security of the country, in the infrastructure. There's been about four changes of cabinet since then. There's people who are on trial. There is a mess. So it's not surprising that we're not seeing that fast of a result. But what is needed is the right people at the top to get things in order gradually. And I do believe, I do believe. And I tell you, I have no reason to say this. I mean, Dr. Mohamed Ibrahim initially has attacked the Germans. He fell for the trap that Hawass had set. But I think he's the right man. I've always said that the Antiquity Department, as always, before Hawass, was needed a man, and there was many good men. There was Mohammed Nuruddin, they had Mohammed Bakar, they had Al-Qadir. I mean, I've known many of them. And of course, before that, there were the French, as you know. There was and indeed, the Antiquity Department was started by the French. Auguste Mariette, very, very honest people, but very scientific. I mean, their objective was to preserve, protect, and study the monument. That's the objective of Egyptology. It's not politics. It's not becoming a star. It's not wanting to become Indiana Jones. It's about that. And that is the man that is in place. Now, I wish him good luck. It's not an easy job. I think we should give him support. I mean, people should understand that he's got a difficult job in hand. And the last thing he needs is this kind of messy politics that Hawass is creating. We wasted a month. We wasted 25 years with Hawass, and now we wasted a month, you know, talking about this nonsense. You know, papers and counter papers and news, and you can't believe what's been going on behind the scene. I've been 24 hours on the phone over this nonsense.
Now, let me ask you this before we wrap up for this time. The photos that you're going to send to me, can I publish those on the program page so our listeners can take a look at them for themselves?
I will give them to you, but you will need authority. I'm always very careful with these things, from Dominique himself.
Okay, yep.
I think you won't have a problem, but wait till you get an okay from him.
Okay, will do, will do.
And then I want you to see them because...
Yeah, sure, you will, sure.
Yes, I think he will allow you to publish, indeed. And you can publish all the statements. The statements are fine. I mean, we actually want them to be published. So I'll send you a batch of statements signed by the Germans, which you can publish or not. It's up to you. I'll send you the statement. Sorry, I'll send you. I haven't received it yet. Apparently, it's coming within the hour, where Dr. Hawass, in writing, has said, at least, that he has no proof of my involvement. I love this because I'm going to use that, of course, in the media. But I'm going to respond to this saying, well, that's very kind of you, but I want a full retraction. So I'll send you all this information, plus the pictures. And bear in mind that there is a high-definition film of the whole episode that will be made available once this matter is cleared. So that, and I'd love you to participate. We need the media to join in. I'm making a call here, and the call is that we need a new Egyptology. Egyptology has to become scientific again, very much like the Vatican had to leave science and deal with their own religious and little games, but leave science to the scientists, leave archaeology to the archaeologists. And this is what is needed, desperately, and to democratize it. Not that Egyptologists are frightened, like it's some sort of Nazi party, that they're afraid to speak out because there is a dictator there. No, everybody is allowed to pass on their theories, to discuss, to debate, to coin that idiom. Play the ball, don't play the players. You know, it's the ball that we have to play. It's the science, it's Egyptology that we have to debate, not who is a Jew and who is a Zionist and who is this and that. So this is the message, that we need to encourage the public to encourage Egyptology to come out again and perform their jobs like they should have done, not in the quiet, not in the dark shadows, because they're afraid of a dictator. I think I've said enough, no?
All right. Well, now it's all good. Thanks, Robert, for the update and some clarification on this. Then we'll begin to wrap up here. But let us know where people can follow you and follow this story as well, because I guess you'll be writing more about this.
So. Anybody can find me on Facebook, because I've made my Facebook public. So it's open to the public. You can read everything that's on the wall, and all the news are there, all the pictures that are relevant to this. The articles that have come out in the press. If you really want to follow this story, go on this Facebook. You can also go, if you want to know more about other activities, go on my website. It's robertbovell.co.uk.
All right, very good. We'll have those links up there, Robert. Well, thank you for the update again, and we'll get together here soon, because next time we have you on, I want to talk more about the Vatican heresy. So we'll touch base on that
indeed,
book.
Indeed,
right?
Indeed. I really want to finish with all this crazy politics and talk about some serious research that involves other aspects of Egyptology, which of course touches the Vatican, because the book that I've written, I'll just very briefly tell you, the book I've written is an explosive book, because it studies the influence of ancient Egypt in the Renaissance through the Hermetic texts and the Hermetic movement. And what comes out of this is quite extraordinary. I've been assisted by a professor at the University of Rome, and we're very, very proud of this book. So yes, sure, I'll give you an interview on this.
All right, thank you very much, Robert. Looking forward to talking more about the book. Have a good one. We'll talk later.
It was a pleasure. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, there you go. You can't agree with everyone all the time, especially in terms of politics. And as you might know, we do cover a lot of different angles and viewpoints on the program. So there you go. That's our pro-Obama point of view for this week. No, but in all sincerity, though, we do appreciate hearing about Robert's Egypt adventures as they continue. But I do hope you have a great Christmas, everyone. We are going to be back with Amy Vickers on Friday with a tribute program to Lloyd Pye that we so unfortunately lost earlier this month to the great beyond, as it were. And we'll discuss how some of Lloyd's work is going to proceed from here with what's called the Starchild Skull and all the other areas of the work that he was involved in. And also, don't forget to get yourself a membership, support what we do, and help us grow and expand. And at the same time, get access to our full archives. RedIceMembers.com is the website. Okay, we'll speak to you in just a few days. Enjoy yourself and take it easy. See you later.